When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
I'm really excited about my guest today. I've had a chance to visit a little bit with her, and I know that we're going to have a great conversation, and you'll enjoy learning all about this person and about her journey in construction. Her name is Cody Fournier. She's a commercial construction executive and entrepreneur. She boasts 25 years of experience on both sides of the owner-contractor equation. Her journey has been nothing short of remarkable. She methodically moved through the industry as a contractor, construction manager, owner, executive, and entrepreneur. She began her career as a field engineer at Turner Construction in 1991. She excelled in several roles, and by the age of 27, she had joined their national training team at Turner Camp 1, a sure indication that she was a standout in her time at Turner. Her next stop took her to an owner serial builder, Blockbuster Entertainment, where she served as a national manager of construction. During the mid-90s, she played a pivotal role in Blockbuster Entertainment's growth, overseeing $100 million in annual construction spending, resulting in over 350 new store openings per year across North America. She also later was the co-founder and CEO of JobSite123.com. Cody's entrepreneurial spirit led her to co-found this job site, a platform that revolutionized online pre-qualification tools for the construction industry. Today, she is a sought-after thought leader and public speaker, addressing industry organizations such as ABC, AGC, NAWIC, and ASPE. Her dynamic presentations inspire aspiring construction professionals across the U.S. She's received numerous awards, including Business Journal's Businesswoman of the Year and Fast Track Magazine's Top 40 Under 40. Oh, did I forget to mention that she is an author and executive coach? As an author, Cody shares her insights in the book entitled Inside Commercial Construction's MVPs. She also provides executive coaching, helping others fast-track their careers and become effective leaders. I'm tired. I'm exhausted from going over that wild ride. Cody, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast.
Thank you for having me, Dennis. It's a pleasure.
Was that you? Was that you that I just talked about?
Pretty close.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. I try to do my best. One of the things we had a chance to visit, so we're kind of a little bit more prepared, if that's the right word. I do want to talk, and I want you to share with the audience what was a 25-year career thus far or so.
Yeah, I think I'm pushing 30 years now.
All right. Well, we'll bump it up to 30. That's even more impressive. I failed to mention, you know, one of your stops, which you talked about in another podcast with great affection, and that was the time you spent with Miller Construction. So mm-hmm. You may want to mention that. My recollection that that was an important stop for you in
it really was, yes.
What you describe as an intentional progression through the industry, and now instead of being part of the industry as a contractor, construction manager, you're now bringing all the wisdom that you gained over those many years in providing coaching and in speaking to the industry under the banner of your theme of construction MVPs. So talk to us a little bit about your journey. My understanding is it was kind of a design build project for you. You began and then you progressed, and it seemed like your stops were all good, useful, not short. You didn't do a flash in the pan appearance in any one of your venues.
No, I did not. Yeah.
So talk about that. And I think where I want to see it progress is that, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, all these things that you've done have provided you with opportunities to gain additional knowledge, experience, to learn more, to acquire additional skills, to hone other skills. So a very intentional, well-rounded path. One of the things that I want you to try to highlight, and maybe it's kind of on the back end of this, is what has all this meant to you? We understand the hard skills part. That's pretty straightforward at any one of these stops. The sprinkling of the entrepreneurial experience, again, just makes you that much more interesting a person based on your experience. But the soft skills part, the part that relates to the qualities that you possess, and the qualities that I would imagine. I haven't had a chance to read your book, but I imagine you talk about the qualities of the person in the role and the fact that as you move into roles of responsibility, which all of yours are, once you, even your initial field engineer job at Turner, you had responsibility for other people. And implied in that is that you not only were managing and directing the effort of a team of individuals, but you were also providing leadership. So that leadership piece, I want to kind of, you know, add a special attention to that as we talk about it. So, mic is yours. Tell us about your journey.
Thank you very much. Some of the highlights you mentioned, but let me maybe go back and add a little more color to each of the steps on my career path. I started as a field engineer with Turner. And for my first 5 or 6 years, I was with Turner in the industry, and it was an excellent foundation for me to get started. One of the benefits that comes with working for a very large construction company, I think Turner was the largest contractor in the world at the time I was with them, is it does give you an opportunity, if you choose it, it does give you an opportunity to get exposed to a wide variety of disciplines within the industry. And I chose to do that. So as you had mentioned, I had a very purposeful and intentional, well-rounded career path. So even while at Turner, I was a field engineer, then I was a cost and scheduling engineer, then I was assistant superintendent, then I was an estimating, then I was back out in assistant superintendent again on a larger project. I want to just kind of point out that kind of well-rounded intention, even in that first 5 years, like experience on both the field and the office side of the equation, and also making a distinction that I chose to be in the field superintendent side of the field. I make mention of that because as opposed to being a project engineer or assistant project manager, I chose the actual field superintendent side of the equation for my field experience. And that first 5-6 years at Turner really, really helped me to develop a good, solid foundation. And having done a wide variety of things, really served also as a foundation for the software skills that I eventually developed throughout the life of my career. So, say for example, one of the most important soft skills that I developed really young, I would put in the category of like love and reverence. So, which I might sound a little funny. We're having a conversation.
Not to me.
Might sound a little funny having a conversation about construction and love and reverence pops out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. But that first 5 or 6 years where I spent, again, mostly in the company of some incredible superintendents and some incredible foremen for major trade contractors on the projects that I was working on. And I was in those positions enough to become competent, enough to become let's say if you were going to give me a report card grade, I would be like a B+, A- player in those positions. But I was fortunate to be surrounded by enough A+ players, like enough world-class level tradesmen, trade foremen, and superintendents that really, really, really taught me a lot. And so very young, I developed this strong reverence for the actual builders of the construction industry, and took that with me even after I left the field. Mm-hmm. So even though my career went into a different direction after about year 5 or 6, what I'm getting at is I spent enough time in those various positions that I left with a very healthy reverence for what it means to be world-class good at those things. Mm-hmm. And that really played, that really, really impacted my ability to develop soft skills, which I know is something that you are passionate about, is a message you are passionate about. And I cannot recommend this enough, that the more well-rounded you make your career in the construction industry, meaning the more hats you actually wear yourself, the more new positions you put yourself in where you're constantly putting yourself into a rookie role. So what I mean by that is I don't care if you've been in the industry 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, every time you take on a new role and a new responsibility, you're a rookie, right? Yeah. You put yourself back into heavy learning mode, right? Like the big learning curve. And it forces you to pay attention to those people who are really good at this position that you are new at. Mm-hmm. And so again, the more experiences you have, the more well-rounded you make your career, the more love and reverence and respect you will create, will be like inspired inside you for all the different people that it takes to run a successful construction company. Mm-hmm. And that love and reverence and respect will serve you well as you go up the ladder and then find yourself in leadership positions, that the more well-rounded your path has been on your way to getting there, the better you will do. Mm-hmm. So it started out that way for me at Turner. And then from there, I also continued on this well-rounded, intentional, well-rounded journey by hopping over to the owner side of the equation, like you said, to basically represent Blockbuster in the development of their store chain. Mm-hmm. So that gave me experience on the owner side, helped me to empathize with what does it feel like? What does it look like? What does it feel like to be on the owner side of the equation, hiring architects and contractors instead of being the contractor? Mm-hmm. So having done that for a little while, again, increased my empathy, my understanding for other people's points of view. Mm-hmm. And then when I stepped back into the contracting world, as you later mentioned, instead of working for a huge global world contractor like Turner, I was intentionally creating a different kind of experience where I would work for Miller Construction Company, which is a very prestigious design builder and general contractor that basically works in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. However, what was really special about my experience there, and again, added to this well-rounded set of experiences for me, was number one, they do almost solely negotiated work. Mm-hmm. So that gives you the opportunity to get exposed to it's just a completely different way of doing business, much more fully integrated, much more teamwork and collaboration oriented, and kind of like opposite of the highly competitive design bid build market. Mm-hmm. So that was one totally new, exceptionally great experience for me in getting exposed to new ways of doing things. And then second of all, most importantly, I was kind of switching from an operations background to a business development role. So I was now getting responsible for a whole nother side of the equation, mm-hmm. right? So that, again, added to this whole purposefully choosing new positions every several years, new situations where I was going to go back to being a rookie. I was going to go back to having a very big learning curve and learn completely new sets of experiences and dynamics related to the construction industry. Mm-hmm. And so all of that was kind of like my first 20 years. And then I got the entrepreneurial bug and I created an owner's rep, a small consulting boutique firm that did owner's representation for healthcare construction in the Southeast. And so that was another new experience. Okay, now I'm back on the owner's side of the equation, but I'm as a consultant. Mm-hmm. So that was, again, a new experience to give me more empathy and understanding from other perspectives at the table. And then the last thing that you mentioned was a totally crazy idea that I was crazy enough to do and started .com for the created opportunities for construction companies to market themselves online, and was very fortunate to get that off the ground and have it be successful. It was ultimately acquired by the bluebook.com, which was then also secondly acquired by the Dodge Construction Network. Mm-hmm. So now all of that technology resides under Dodge's umbrella. But I think the most important message that I want to share with your listeners is just this kind of shared passion and commitment that you and I have to towards raising awareness of the importance of developing all of these soft skills along the way that you're developing all the hard ones, right, in the industry.
Yeah.
And I'm just suggesting that if you don't know where to start, if you're young in the industry and you're not really sure where to start, one of the most important things you can do is have a very well-rounded career path and put on as many hats as you can and get direct firsthand experience being as many different players around the table as you can.
I don't want to spend too much time, but it's interesting. What was the, I get the entrepreneurial inclination as far as the owner representation, because that's kind of still within the suite of associated experiences. What was the trigger for 123?
It was the first time that I had like a moment of clarity that, you know what, I want to figure out if there's a way where I could pivot to working on the industry instead of in it. And that's kind of like a phrase I coined back then, 2007, when I made this decision, and I've stuck with it. So formulating jobsite123.com, which again, like I said, eventually became part of the bluebook.com, was my first real attempt to think about how can I make an impact on the industry as a whole and help as many buyers and sellers in the industry as possible, as opposed to whatever specific company I'm working for or whatever specific project I'm working on. And so that idea was just kind of birthed in my living room, and I was fortunate enough to get enough momentum behind it to be able to get it to take off. And then, like I said, eventually have it be successfully acquired. But since then, I've kind of remained in this focus of working on the industry instead of in it. So I like that feeling. I like what I'm doing now, where I feel like I have the opportunity to help many different companies and individuals in many different circumstances. And I spend an awful lot of time and energy and effort, again, working on it as opposed to working full time in it in any one particular place. So I think that was part of the ethos that was going through my mind at the time.
So again, I want to know more. I want to know more. So again, what you developed was an online pre-qualification system, basically.
Right.
What was happening, or what did you observe in the industry that said, this is a problem, I think I can figure out a way to solve the problem?
Yes.
How did you see it?
Yeah. Well, so keep in mind, go back in your head that this would have been like 2007 and 2008. Okay. So technology was nowhere near what it is now. Okay. Right. So everything that I'm about to say really was on the bleeding edge of these ideas, right? Definitely very risky, very much on the bleeding edge. But what I wanted to create was this was about the time when Google was becoming so powerful that you could just basically type into Google whatever question you had, and Google would give you an answer. Like, say, for example, you just wanted to type in what's playing at Cinemark down the street, right? And it would just give you the answer, the click here, and here's all the movies playing at the Cinemark nearest you. Okay, well, I wanted that kind of Q&A. I wanted that to be available for questions that were needed and necessary in the construction industry. So say, for example, I created the whole thing was based on the concept that you should be able to just type into Google, plumbers with healthcare experience in Dallas, Texas. And I wanted Google to give me information that would be helpful towards that. So that was the original point of JobSite 123, was to be able to connect buyers and sellers utilizing the power of search engine optimization. So, and it also was an attempt to help contractors to create, to very easily create their own online presence. Because you have to remember, back in 2007 and 2008, not every construction company even had a website.
Right.
So the the platform allowed construction companies to basically build their own profile within the platform, and it would have in it all of the basic pre-qualification information that somebody looking to hire you would want and need from your company. And it took all of your answers to those standard pre-qualification questions, and it built it automatically for you into a pretty cool looking web profile, mm-hmm. which was then accessible, indexable by Google and Bing and all the search engines. And so, and we were able to get it to work, and it worked pretty well. So it was just enough to kind of get the attention eventually of the bluebook.com, because the bluebook.com had and still does have huge monthly traffic to its site. Mm-hmm. So the Bluebook then became interested in acquiring the technology because they had the traffic to their site looking for resources. And so buying our technology was like a really, really helpful add-on or plug-in to what they already had. So as you can imagine, many companies, when they're trying to decide to do technology upgrades to their system, they kind of do the build it versus buy it analysis. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time they felt it was wiser for them to acquire the technology from us and then kind of plug it into their systems as opposed to building it themselves for scratch, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I would say it's very fair to say that you were on the bleeding edge.
Yes.
Back in those years, technology was even spelled differently.
It certainly was. As well as, can you imagine, I always say I give myself credit for having guts at the time, because if you recall 2008, like the whole world economy just completely crashed and tanked. So what the hell was I doing starting a .com at that time? But, so I knew enough to be dangerous. I knew enough to give it a try. But again, it was an example of trying to capitalize and be helpful on all of the experiences that I had. I was extremely empathetic to what it was like to be an owner trying to find resources quickly in any given area. I was also empathetic to what it's like to be a contractor trying to effectively market your qualifications to potential buyers, and to have those things be geography specific and to have those things be in line and indexable and compatible with new trends, like people learning to Google information. Right. So I was trying to bring all of those things, which were disparate at the time, and I was trying to find a way to bring them all together with absolutely no technology background at all. I just was inspired by the idea that you should be able to do that. And so I gave it a shot.
It's certainly a bonus feature of your career journey. So there's no question about that.
I always say I have like a PhD in entrepreneurship by doing that, because who knew? Like, I can't even imagine when I was a field engineer at Turner way back in the day. Like, I certainly could never have predicted that, 25 years later, I'd be doing something like that, or being in like a Shark Tank kind of environment, like just pitching things and raising millions of dollars of investment capital. And it's just, things I never would have predicted for myself, but nonetheless have greatly added to my, my well-roundedness in the industry, which again, back to our shared passion, has really, really helped me to be quite empathetic and understanding about a wide variety of perspectives in the industry.
Yeah, I would say so. So let me go back, and I kind of want to dig into a few things. First, early on, you talked about love and reverence. When you use the word love, what are you talking about the people? Are you talking about the job? Are you talking about the job with the people? What is love to you?
Yeah, my love and reverence for the construction industry. Wow, did that hit me by surprise? Like, I really did not know that would happen to me. So the best way to explain my surprise there is to, if you had asked me, well, why did you get in the construction industry in the first place? Let's say you had asked me that. Here's my answer. It is so unusual. Like, I did not have any family in the construction industry. It's not like my father owned a construction company or anything like that. I had no thought of working in the construction industry whatsoever as a child or anything. So then how did I end up here? Well, when I was at Michigan State and I first thought maybe I might be interested in majoring in architecture, I don't know, but I never did. But it was a tiny thought in the back of my mind. And I was kind of like undeclared with no major my freshman year. And I find this magazine. You have to remember, when I say magazine, I'm talking 1987. So there was nothing online yet, right? Everything was still done old school. And Michigan State published this like catalog magazine thing every year. And it, you have all the 400 major choices that, you know, because Michigan State's a massive public institution. So there's hundreds of majors. But this particular catalog ranked them by average starting salary out of school. Okay. Uh-huh. And number one, if my memory is correct, don't hold me to this, but my memory is that I think chemical engineering was number one and construction management was number two.
Really?
And I was like, what is this? What is this construction management thing? I'm just telling you my level of ignorance. Like I just had no idea, but I looked at it. And I'm like, oh, half the classes are in the College of Engineering, half the classes are in the College of Business. Uh-huh. And apparently you can get a good job and make good money. Uh-huh. What is this? You know, so I thought, well, let me make an appointment with the academic advisor and go find out more about it. So I did. And I found out that it was true, that it was quite lucrative. You could do very well. And I thought, well, here's all this mixture of classes that are like half technical and half business. I thought, well, I won't get bored. I'll learn a lot. I'll walk away with this well-rounded education. And by the way, there were no women in it at all. So I was like, oh, if I could actually be good at this, I'll also stand out. I'll be unique. And you can apparently make a lot of money. So that was my reasoning for choosing it. It had nothing to do yet with love or reverence or anything about the construction industry. Just that. Okay.
That would have been such a good question for me to ask. It's a shame I didn't. I mean, I should ask that question and see what your answer is.
Well, there you go.
All right. So let's follow on this. All right. Because I had another question. So I kind of get the love part now, and I'm really good with that. The word that actually comes more to mind actually when you take love and reverence putting together is passion. You know,
right.
Like, you know, but and I think they're roughly synonymous. But the one thing that you mentioned, just as a, you know, kind of an incidental, is the mention of the fact that you're a woman, and that at the time you were making a decision about getting this construction management stuff, your view of that part of your reality was that it would give you the opportunity to stand out and be unique.
Yeah,
I haven't had a single woman, and I talk to a lot of women let me ask you a different question, and we'll come back to this. If you had to say what the top two or three major challenges our industry is facing right now, what would your answer be to that question?
Probably, okay, two things stand out in my mind. One of them is on the technical side. One of them's on the people side. So on the people side, I think it's pretty clear. Most people would probably say our industry has like a PR problem. We don't do a good job of selling ourselves as an industry and why fabulous career opportunities exist within the construction industry. And along those lines, we are only now just starting to work on improving some of the problems of having some of the downsides of having a career in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. So for all of those reasons, we need improvement on the PR side, the talent acquisition side, and the talent retainage mm-hmm. side mm-hmm. of the industry. So I would say that's a big problem. Mm-hmm. The second probably biggest problem that I feel, this is one of like a personal soapbox that I'm often on, is that just we as an industry need to do a better job of saying no to a lot of the unrealistic, ridiculous client requests and project deliverables. So it's like, I think, unfortunately, we create a lot of stress in the industry by accepting projects, pursuing projects and accepting projects under ridiculous constraints that cause just unbelievable amounts of stress. So, I mean, that's one of the things that I learned from working at Miller Construction Company, again, that I value so much, is that you should say no. You should say no to way more opportunities that come to you than say yes. Yeah.
No is not a four-letter word. In other
That's
words.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think those are two really good needs in the industry. I think the way you've talked about them. I'm fascinated though by the fact that that there's, you don't have more to say about different treatment of people. I mean, because again, as I observe the industry, I agree with both of the things you said, but I would have had up there, and I do have up there in the top, the whole issue of attracting people to the industry, and,
right.
and in particular, women and people of color.
Yes.
Huge problem in the industry. And again, I've talked to a lot of women leaders, including the past president of NAWIC, which is an organization that's recognized you.
Oh, Doreen. Yes.
That's correct. Oh, that's right.
Yes.
I'll see her in a week and a half or so.
Yes.
She's terrific. We could talk about people you and I both know and probably take up another half hour of this conversation. But, It seems like from your very first days, the way you talked about love and reverence, the way you talked about working with some incredible people, you and I both know back when you started your career, those incredible people that you found were likely white males.
They were all men. Yes. Okay. They were not all white, but they were all men.
The vast majority. Were in that time frame were white males, but you're right. There was some blending.
Not where I lived. I mean, I lived in South Florida, so
you probably had a lot of Hispanic workers.
There was a wide variety of ethnicities.
I stand corrected. Generally speaking.
But
the other issue has to do with an entirely different facet of people, and that is mental wellness. But let's just stay on the gender, on the equality,
okay.
diversity kind of thing. Is it because you just didn't get affected by it for all these years, or did you just see what it was and you just were focused on your journey, your next steps, your well-rounded approach, and being more motivated by the idea of standing out? So that you had the opportunities that you created for yourself and pursued. What makes you different than a lot of the women that I've talked to?
Yeah, let me give you some feedback around that. First of all, I think I did not have expectations to be treated perfectly. Mm-hmm. So I might have just been a lot more understanding and accepting of the imperfections of the situation. And also way back then, I think no one was talking about these things back then. And so it really was not a topic of conversation. It really was more just like, okay, well, here's the sandbox. You're going to have to learn how to play in there if you want to survive it. And so here you go. Here's your chance. Have at it.
Yeah.
But I just did not have expectations that everything would go perfectly, or that everyone's behavior would, you know, pass some sort of test. But I will say that, first of all, I want to acknowledge that I think I was very fortunate to be surrounded by enough people who gave me sincere chances to learn and grow. And so I owe my career, as I was saying, with love and reverence to a small group of people who I spent time with in the field, who really did give me a chance to learn and grow and make tons of mistakes and be completely green and take me seriously enough to move me along my career path. So first of all, gratitude to that. Mm-hmm. But second of all, I just want to say that I want to share a story that I think will shine some light on the point you're making. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, I have been speaking publicly to the construction industry for 25, 30 years now. And you can imagine how many times people after either during a Q&A session or come up to me afterwards will ask me with true sincerity, with true curiosity, will ask me, you know, what was it like for you as a woman in the industry? Or was it a disadvantage for you being a woman in the industry? So picture that, how many hundreds of times that's happened to me. So here's the thing. This is what I always respond. My first response is completely honest, and it is yes. Of course it's a disadvantage. Of course. Like, I find the question a little bit silly because it's so obvious to me that it's a disadvantage. So yes, it was a disadvantage on virtually every level, all the way through my entire career. So that's my honest response. But here's the good news. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, being a woman is a disadvantage in the industry, but it's not the biggest disadvantage you could have. In my opinion, it's not even the second biggest disadvantage you could have. So that's why I consider my response to the question good news, because yes, it's a disadvantage, but in my opinion, it's the third highest one. So what are the first and second most biggest disadvantages?
That would be a good question for me to ask, wouldn't it?
Yes. So here's what I think. This is my personal opinion based upon my own observations. The number one thing that will disadvantage you is genderless, and it's all based on personality. So if you, it will be a tough road for you. You will be disadvantaged if you are shy, if you are relatively passive, if you are a relatively non-assertive personality. Man or woman, I don't care. That's the biggest disadvantage from my experience. Well, I did not have that problem.
Yeah.
So I did not carry that disadvantage.
You just hovered around on the fringe of something called, and one part of it is soft skills.
Okay.
Yes. So thank you for doing that. And I would agree with you. And then when you talk about it wasn't a problem for you in terms of engaging with people, again, that has to do with your particular personality and understanding it. And in your case, since you are an extrovert, quite plain and simple, which is a good thing, particularly in leadership roles, particularly where you have to try to be involved with people and motivate them. So that's all good. What's number two?
Number two, I say the second biggest disadvantage, which also is genderless, mm-hmm. is just flat out inexperience. Mm-hmm. Okay, just lack of knowledge, just mm-hmm. inexperience, just being green, just yeah. being young, just yeah. being inexperienced. Yeah. But notice that is genderless.
Yeah.
And notice that is something you can't control. Over time, you will be less inexperienced. You will be less green. Right. Okay. And then I would put disadvantage number three, maybe being a woman or an ethnic minority, you know, that could pop in there, but I would have it at least down to number three, That's why I'm very empathetic and understanding to these issues. I think it's wonderful that we're all having conversations about them, but I also think it's really empowering to make sure that when we're talking to women and other minorities in the construction industry, that the conversation is not all doom and gloom about the disadvantages. That's why I always work very hard to make sure I answer the question honestly. Yes, it caused some disadvantages for sure. Mm-hmm. But here's the good news. It's not the biggest disadvantage.
Yeah. I love your answer. I think that's great. I think I can agree with it pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, let me say this. This is how strongly I feel. Give me a woman or an ethnic minority that's a man, either one, as long as they're super smart, they're gritty, they're fearless, they're hyper curious, they're willing to ask questions. Give me that, and I'll bet on that person all day long in the construction industry. That's what I care about. Give me those qualities. I don't care about the gender.
That's the path that your MVPs follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would say that out of those five things that you mentioned, four of them, again, are related to soft skills.
They are related to soft skills. Yeah. And maybe the one that's not related to soft skills, just to, you know, have a well-rounded discussion about it. The next biggest thing that I advise is, you know, excuse my French, but get your ass out in the real field and stay out there.
Yeah.
stay out there for as long as possible. And when I say the field, I mean superintendent.
Boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground.
Not brand new ones.
Exactly.
Not brand new ones you just got from the, what's the latest great one is, shucks, I can't think of it now. And certainly not a color other than either black or tan. Introduce a color into your hard toe shoes, then they're not hard toed anymore.
Yeah. The point is you want to be out there interacting with the people who really know how to build things. Absolutely. So that knowledge can transfer to you before you start focusing your career on moving paperwork around. Mm-hmm. You want to get as much exposure as you can to actual building knowledge. Absolutely. I've never met anyone ever in the construction industry who has ever said to me, I spent too much time in the field.
Right.
I wasted too much time in the field. I've never heard that.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, you know what? Our time is more than up. I knew it was not going to be easy for you and I just to talk for 30 or so minutes. But we did, and a little bit more, and every second is worth it. Some of the things that came from your thoughts that we took a look at and talked further about, really interesting. You have some different takes on things, not in a bad way, and frankly, in a very good way.
Oh, thank you.
And there's no question in my mind that I can see, not only based on your journey, but as you work on the industry, we need more people that are trying to work on the industry around the things that need the work. And that is, how do we take care of the people?
That's right.
Whether they're the people that we're trying to find and bring into the industry, the people that we get here and want to keep, the people that we hire to serve our customers and our customers themselves. And I know you get all that. And I really, it's just my, kind of a punctuating thought. It is different, but the gender thing isn't a thing for you.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fabulous. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm doing a whole big panel discussion on women in the construction industry. We're talking about, you know, them getting access to opportunities and all this and that.
Put me on the panel.
Well, we probably needed a little dose of Cody, you know. Cody, thank you so much. This was a great way to finish up my week, and I thoroughly enjoyed seeing you again. I'm sure that we're going to talk again.
Oh, I would love to. I hope our paths cross in some way. And I just want to say thank you for everything that you are doing, Dennis, because we obviously have this shared passion and commitment around soft skills. And so I just want to say thank you for all you're doing to like move the ball in the right direction.
Appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Keep listening to my podcast.
I will.
Yeah.
I just listened to the Doreen episode and the Barb Allen episode.
Yeah. And wait till you hear the Cody Fournier episode. That is going to be, you're not going to be able to stop smiling when you hear that episode. Thanks very much.
Well, let me know if you ever want to do it again.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft as Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft as Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft as Steel podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.